Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. Before I start, I wanted to see, quick raise of hands. How many people here think or have or believe, over-monitoring and alert fatigue is a problem that they're dealing with at their companies? Just raise your hands. Okay, it's about half people. Did you know, again, we're talking about tech, but did you know that this is a very big problem in intensive care units? How many people knew that about 99% or up to 99% of the alarms at ICUs are actually false positives? How many people knew that? Wow. The first time I heard about it, it's quite a staggering number. The first time I heard about it, I was a bit in disbelief, just because, again, this could, at the rate at which events are missed, it's almost guaranteed that the alarm fatigue is going to make you miss certain events. In fact, when my twins were born prematurely and when they were at the NICU, my wife and I used to freak out each time there was an alarm. What was interesting was the nurses and the doctors did not respond to every alarm. So they were pretty selective. So somehow they knew that some alarms were important and some alarms were not as important. In fact, the point I was trying to make was this is a real problem. You probably saw in the in my abstract in 2010 there was a death of a patient that was directly related to alarm being missed by a lot of nurses. So this is as real as it gets. As I mentioned, this is such a big problem that some of the hospitals that actually have this as one of their top 10 health technology hazards, and also it's a national patient safety goal. One thing I did want to mention was when you have a 99% or up to 99% false alarm rate, your service essentially becomes best effort, right? There's no way humanly possible for humans to be responding to all these alerts and only find out that 99% of them or some high number are just false alarms. At some point, the fatigue will kick in. Anyway, what can we learn from this? Obviously, more is not better. That's clear. The real question we should be asking is, are we solving for that 1% use case? I mean, if you talk about healthcare, it's probably important because you would not want people to die. But if you are willing to keep up with, or if you're willing to accept the fact that 99% of your alarms can are false, and then you are just waiting that for that one alarm to go off, you will have to go back and think about think deeply about, is that the right approach in the first place? But again, use monitoring judiciously. Make sure there's a purpose. If you have an alarm, if you have an alert, make sure that it's it serves a specific purpose. Okay. Enough of that on healthcare. But how can we solve this in tech, which is why I'm here, right? I think, as when I asked the question, a lot of people raised their hands saying this is actually a real problem. I don't know how to solve it in healthcare just because people's lives are at stake, but when you're at a company, when you're in tech, I was at Zynga, I joined as the head of SRE, I was, willing to make some bets to try to attempt to solve this problem. So that's what this talk is about. Obviously, because people's lives are not at stake. Zynga, hopefully people have heard about it. This was back in 2013, a pioneer in a bunch of things, including a pioneer in the hybrid cloud. I'm not sure but all new games were launched on AWS. And then once the traffic patterns became predictable, the games were brought back in-house to a private cloud called zCloud. And also microservices, as they call these days. Back then, we didn't call it then, but if you had to build a mobile game, you just didn't need a server. Everything was an API call. Everything was a service or a microservice. So a pioneer in many fields of engineering. But when it came to alerts. This was a situation, like over 100,000 alerts that triggered every month. All these alerts went to an SRE team, which I was running in three different locations, sort of like the follow the sun model, three different tiers. This was the alert route that was taken. So tier one, tier two, tier three, and then finally, you know, it went to dev. I have like really strong opinions on this, but again, we'll talk more about that. Just because if there are 100,000 alerts triggering every month, going to one team, and during every shift there's like two people or three people looking at, staring at like 40 different screens, there's no way a human or a set of humans can keep up with that stuff. So essentially, your service becomes, you know, best effort. Like there's no question about it. So what the way this worked was, you know, let's say your new game, your new studio, you come in and say, you know what, can you monitor this, you know, DAUs, or can you monitor my peak simultaneous connection? So there was a monitor for that. So pretty soon we had like 30 plus or 40 monitors. In fact, there was like there was a time where we moved offices, and this was before I joined the company, and I was told that there were even more monitors back then, you know, before I joined the company back in 2013. Alerts were color-coded. So just like if you remember what I told about the nurses in the hospitals, you know, where my twins were there, somehow you have this, I think people develop this heuristics where they sort of know what alert is important and what alert is not important. So alerts were color-coded, and there were a lot of colors being used. It's almost like some companies like to use priorities, and that, you know, after some point, you're like, there's not enough priority. You know, let's say P1 to P10, and you know, after P3, everything is a P3, right? So it doesn't make sense to have so many priorities. And then some teams were given more preference based on the revenue they made, again, or the most amount of, whoever made the most amount of noise were given most preference, which means more humans were watching or had their eyes on the screens. Obviously not the right model. Obviously, this is because you're not rewarding good behaviors. In fact, there were some teams which were, you know, clean, you know, had things clean, but they were not being rewarded because they were not making enough money. I think the right thing to do, again, is to reward people who are, you know, good citizens and, you know, following best practices and things like that. Again, fundamentally, if you're not rewarding good behaviors, there's no incentives, like, to keep things clean, right? That's obvious. If there's no incentives to keep things clean, you're not going to, you know, again, continue that good behavior. As a result, as you can imagine, at that volume, there was almost an outage every other day. Customers suffered. In fact, I was getting escalation calls very frequently, and every day was filled with anxiety, and it was not a fun time to be there. Okay, in terms of solutions, the previous leader, or you know, tried a few things, and I can say for sure, if you're trying to throw people at the problem, that is never going to work. If you have that high of an alert volume, right? I think maybe two alerts a shift is okay, but if it's in the, you know, hundreds or even, you know, thousands, there's no way you can throw people at the problem. So this is, again, just illustrative purposes. You cannot grow your team fast enough to deal with that kind of alerts. And don't even try, because that cannot scale. Filtering noise is also not the right approach, because what we try to do was, if you start color coding alerts, pretty soon you're going to run out of colors. And then that's when you start to have your screen flash, and just like at the NICU, you know, there's like some alerts which are like constantly beeping. That's when you know something's going on, something's important, right? So obviously you don't want to be doing that as well. In fact, there was a for SOX compliance. You know, as we you know, became a public company, SOX compliance was very important. So every time there was an alert with that, the screen was like flashing. So someone at the NOC knew that this is important and they need to attend to it immediately. So pretty bad. And then again, more tools to filter the noise or otherwise is not necessarily the answer. I know some companies where you can throw, they claim that you can throw like a million alerts at them, and they somehow filter those alerts, and there's algorithms which make sense of this and present you with a situation, whatever. I don't necessarily believe that. I think you should be fixing the alerts closer to the source. The previous approach is sort of like wrong in my opinion. Okay, so we tried a bunch of things, and they did not work. So what is the answer to this problem, right? I joined the company, it's been a couple months. I think before you try to solve a problem, I think you need to have a strong vision, right? Strong vision of where you want to get to. To me, I always wanted to get to, as I mentioned earlier, less than 2 alerts per shift, right? So that you can root cause each alert, you can keep up with it. I wanted the on-call, ultimately, I wanted the alerts to go directly to the dev teams, right? I wanted the SRE team to focus on engineering, to do some infrastructure work. Big on ownership, right? So you wrote it, you own it sort of a thing. I'll be using that word a lot. And of course, zero TVs, right? So I wanted to go down from 30 or 40 to zero, like no more monitors, like alerts go directly to pagers. So that was the vision. And then you want to socialize your vision, get feedback. Some people are like, really? Are you sure? Most people were skeptical, but then you don't give up. A sample conversation with the dev team. I walk in, speak with someone and say, hey, dude, what's going on? You're spamming. When you look at your Nagios back then, we were using Nagios. It was all red. Can we talk? And the response was quite fascinating. The teams would say, this was the dev teams telling me, can you go back and ask your team to respond to alerts in a timely fashion, please? Can you do that first, and then we can talk? So I was like, okay. But again, it sort of shows you that like people were not talking with each other, so the dev teams were like, they were expecting the SRE team to respond. The SRE team, on the other hand, was trying to solve this problem by throwing people at it or by trying to filter the noise. So the teams were not necessarily talking with each other. My teams, on the other hand, I got this from, I think the Google SRE book, but it's a pretty good representation of the level of complexity that is required to make your product more reliable, right? From the least, from the lowest to the highest. And when I look at my teams back then, they were like all over the place, right? There were some people were just focused on monitoring, the NOC. Some people were sitting with product, making some reliability improvements. Like it was all over the spectrum. In other words, spread too thin. But then, I didn't give up, despite the fact that people were asking me or telling me to go back and do my job. I always I continued to engage with them. I persisted. I used to go to people's desks. I used to go and say, hey, can you look at this alert? Like, why is this firing? I think that was very helpful for me to build those relationships. I was also on call for a period of time, just so that I was in the front lines understanding what was going on with the system. But I wasn't sure what is it that I really needed to blaze the trail, to sort of make that big impact, right? And then guess what happened? There was a massive outage. Apparently, this outage, if I remember correctly, it's been years, but there was a broadcast storm, which the applications were, and there was a certain packet type, which the applications were not, they were not dealing with it gracefully, which resulted in outages. And there was these were pretty massive outages. If you played Zynga in 2013 back, there were times when we were down for hours. And then there were more. And then during one outage, I was on the call and I was so frustrated. And that's when I had this light bulb moment saying, let me do something dramatic. Any guesses? What's that? That's a good guess. Anyone else? What's that? Just kill everyone? I wanted to at some point of time, but I have a family, so it's probably not the right thing to do. This is what I decided to do. So you decide to deny SRE support, right? So fundamentally, this talk is about this saying no, making sure that you are, asking the right questions and trying to create those incentives so that the teams can work with each other. There's a catch, right? You're not just saying no, right? You're saying based on alert budgets. So every team, every studio, we negotiated alert budgets. And if you went over that, basically you were denied coverage, so temporarily. So if you go over, let's say, more than 5 noisy alerts per week, you will be kicked out of what we call it. The initiative was called clean room, right? So you get kicked out, so you go out, you clean up, you come back in. The incentive was, once you are, you know, again, a good citizen, you will be rewarded with, you know, world-class SRE support. So low response times, we will attend every alert. So in a way, you're creating those incentives so that you can, you're sort of holding each other accountable, and then you can, SRE can focus on engineering. The dev teams can hopefully get to a point where there's alert volume is low enough that they can be, you know, alerts can go directly to that team. So that was like the fundamental concept. But saying no is hard, right? In fact, I think I read this thing in HBR saying this is probably the most important skill for any person, not just a leader, right? And it's hard to do, but it is also powerful. So if you remember, I said like always leverage outages, right? So for people to take you seriously, you have to show that you care, right? You have to be willing to do what it takes, like show small wins. So what I did was, when these outages happened, I sort of like religiously ran postmortems. I mean, there was no postmortem culture as such, ran them, sent weekly follow-ups, literally hunted down teams which could, like each of the studios, so that they can fix their code to be able to deal with those broadcast storms. I used to send out weekly reports. So in other words, I sort of was building the credibility, and along the process, I was making, you know, I was building rapport with people and a lot of people, like, you know, gaining visibility and building those relationships. Again, do enough so that people start taking you and your vision seriously. So that's like the rule. If you're going after a large transformation or a transformation at a large company, this is, you know, one way. I'm not saying outages should happen, but if they do happen, and they will happen, make sure that you leverage them. And then, as I started meeting more people, what I found was almost like startling. What I found was everyone wanted the alert volume to be low, except that no one had a plan to fix this. But SRE, on the other hand, was this horizontal org which was in this unique position to fix that problem, right? So if you're in a company where you're like a horizontal function, you have much more leverage and power than you actually think. Rule number two: find your allies. Right? Always. If when you are trying to do something like big at companies, make sure that you have people who are radically aligned with you. And the only way to find those people is to actually go meet people. That's the only way. Right? So in this case, you know, it was our CTO, so he was aligned with me, and in fact, clean room wouldn't have happened without him. Call your boss. Make sure, what I mean by that is make sure your boss is aligned with your goals, right? You don't want your boss to be in a surprise, right? I'll tell you why this is critically important, right? Like rule number two and three, but make sure that he's aligned. In fact, there was one day I just called him and told him, you know what, I'll be making dramatic changes and you should expect like a big shakeup. And then, of course, the rule number four is, you know, get buy-in from senior leaders. Yeah. Again, leverage those partnerships. When you are meeting someone who is senior, who is meeting a lot of other people as well, make sure you have your vision ready, you have your plan ready, and you should be able to explain that, you know, precisely, concisely, right? Okay, so all good. You know, we built these relationships. People were willing to support my idea. And now it was time to actually, you know, convey this to my teams and the dev teams, right? So I said no to my team. I said, let's focus on one thing, baby steps. Let's do that one thing properly. Let's execute on that. Let's show to the company that we can deliver. And then automatically, hopefully, you know, we'll be given more responsibilities. Said no to the dev teams. I said, not everyone deserves SRE support. It must be earned, right? So you have to live within certain budgets. Otherwise, you know, no SRE support, you'll be kicked out. Response from the dev teams, I mean, they were not crying, but they were like, are you like kidding me? Your team exists because we pay for it. In fact, Zynga had a chargeback model where you pay a certain amount for an instance in the Z-Cloud, and you got SRE along with that. And there were a lot of escalations to my boss, to his boss's boss. But again, that's where the rule number two and three and four, like leverage the relationships, you know, get the buy-in from senior leaders because they will help manage these escalations properly. And then my team was like, what about job security? After all, I was proposing, you know, to take some responsibilities away from them, right? I'm saying you were doing all these things, if you remember the pyramid, and then so they do one thing, but do that one thing properly. And some people threatened to quit. And some people eventually did, right? Because if you're saying, coming in and saying, you know, I'll be taking some of your responsibility away temporarily, some people just don't like that. And some, you know, and then some people you have to let go because they don't fit in with that vision, right? Just to remind people, like, don't forget the power of no. Again, this is, if you can stand firm, I mean, there's going to be conflict, but if you can stand firm and learn to say no, the outcomes can be pretty awesome. And it's also very important, it's not just you who should be saying no, you should be empowering your teams to also learn to say no, right? Again, the promise to my team was, you know, higher value add work in the future, as we talked about, you know, SRE, like going from like a NOC or NOC plus plus or NOC plus 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 to actually doing engineering. And then if someone says, like, can you automate yourself out of the job, that's never ever possible. In fact, if you do, I'm sure there's so many companies in the world who would just, you know, if you truly automated yourself out of the job, you know, there's a ton of companies in the world who would offer you a new job. Clean room, the initiative, again, the contracts were established. We individually met with each of the studios, sat down, baselined the alerts, came up with something reasonable, saying no more than X number or Y or N number of alerts per week. Again, that contracts were established. And then we gave enough times for people to go back and, you know, to go and clean up, or for the dev teams to go back and clean up. I think it was probably like 3 months or so. And soon this became a corp initiative. Again, rule number four, once you get a buy-in from senior leaders and once your initiative becomes a corp initiative and everyone knows about it, the chances of success are a lot higher than if you were just doing it in silo or by yourself. Okay, but how do you actually go about reducing the noise, right? I talked so much about people and culture and you know, ideas. I'm not gonna like talk a lot on this, given I have like 3 minutes left, but first define what an alert is. All alerts should be actionable, you know, sort of require human intelligence to fix. In terms of process culture, the two things that I really love are if you are running an initiative and you're sending out weekly reports, make sure that you have the numbers or the percentages close to the leader's name so that you sort of use the public shaming or, you know, the peer pressure to actually bring about a change in the initiative. So that stuff is really, really, really powerful. Like, no leader wants to see like a low percentage score next to their, even though they may have nothing to do with that initiative, or not directly, of course. In terms of tools, again, try to differentiate between, you know, it sucks that people like send, think of alerts as like, you know, they're not logs, they're not tickets. Like, an alert is an alert. It needs to be attended to within like 15 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. If it's a ticket, if it can wait until next morning, it can actually wait. You know, the transparency around the clean room was built with, you know, the framework for the clean room was built with transparency in mind. Everything was instrumented. We started off with the team. There were small wins, you know, one win at a time. The momentum will pick up. We launched after we gave people enough time to go clean up their alerts. A few teams were kicked out. Some teams were given exceptions because, you know, some cases, you know, for example, if there was like a lot of attrition on the team, then we gave those teams more time to go and clean up. It was a success. The 90% drop in false alarms. The SRE response times, you know, were down to 5 minutes. The availability improved by a whole 9. Customers were happier. Overall, it was like good. And again, all I did was try to align incentives by saying no. And that has not, you know, that usually leads to positive outcomes, as you have seen. And this was a good example. And this can be applied to so many different things. Closing thoughts. I'm sort of passionate about this topic, like dev and ops, like, do we have it backwards? Do you have it backwards? You know, are you pushing code for stuff you don't own or responding to alerts for products you don't own or testing and debugging code? Just ask yourself, I mean, is that the best use of your time? Are you really adding value? In my opinion, and also like, I've also read this on HBR, like talent, especially in large organizations, is misused. So make sure that you say no to low level tasks. You know, maybe not, just don't drop everything, but then have a plan. Because once you start saying no, you can start saying yes to things which matter, right? A better model is, in my opinion, like core dev teams own everything, build, test, deploy, monitor, capacity, the whole thing, postmortems, incident management. Non-core dev teams and ops teams are the rest. Again, they also own, but they own infrastructure, automation, frameworks, dev tools, network, and everything else, right? To me, in my opinion, that's like a better model. There's an awesome, awesome blog post by someone, by an SRE at Google, by I don't know her name, it says JBD, that's her Twitter. You'll read that post. She clearly explains like how Google does it. In fact, at Google I've heard, as per that post, SRE is optional. So you just don't get SRE support. You have to earn it, which is awesome. Again, I'm not trying to get philosophical here, but reflect, take some time, do some soul searching. One of the questions I love to ask is like, why does my team even exist, right? Once you start there, you start to go back and start questioning everything. Like, how am I really adding value? In some cases, hopefully you're not detracting, you know, from the value. Question stupid stuff like this, you know. Sometimes I'm sitting postmortems and people say, we've been told by I don't know whom that teams one and two are X and Y are tiers of one and tier two for the company. So that's stupid, right? So question assumptions. Make sure that you're questioning everything. And then I think it's our responsibility sort of to define the future. And, you know, I'm big on ownership, automation, self-serve tools. And you don't have to go through this slide, but are you ready to say no? If so, I think it's going to make a big impact, much bigger than you think. Thank you.